the Merriment quantum cellular automaton and the anomalies in Floki code. This talk is based on work with together with David Aysen, Joan Hai, and Roger Meng, and also I want to thank Benny for a lot of very helpful discussions. Okay, so I'd like to motivate this talk by presenting a puzzle in the Floki code. So so the Floki code is something as follows. Suppose you have a lattice, like suppose you have a lattice like this, and you color this lattice by three colors, red, green, and blue. And also then you color all the edges by these three colors. So let's say the edge between a red one and a green one will be a blue edge. Now the Floki code is like a period three measurement. So at the first time, you measure all the XX operator on the red edges. And then the second one is you measure all the YY operators on the green edges. And the third one is that you measure the ZZ operator on the blue edges. So interestingly, by using this kind of period measurement, you can achieve some kind of fault-tolerant quantum memory. Although I don't have time to explain how to do error correction, but it's possible. And what's important for our talk is that I also need to explain that at each time step, after t becomes large enough, at each time step, then the system will be in the torical state. So as we know, if we put system in the torus, then for torical we have two logical qubits. But as always, we don't really want to put the system on a torus. We want to put the system into, say, a kind of a 2D planary system with boundary. Now, in a static case, what we do is that we introduce some kind of gap boundary condition. So for example, if we put the toric code on a square, we can introduce two rough edge and two smooth edge. Now the system will have only one logical qubit, and the co-distance will be proportional to the system size. However, if you want to do the same thing in the Floki code case, you will be going to some kind of trouble, because let's say if you just introduce some kind of boundary condition for the toric code for this toric code, and now you do this kind of period three measurement, then effectively those three measurements can tell you the information of the logical string. So you don't want that, because you want to preserve the information. You don't want to measure the information. And more interestingly, this kind of trouble seems to be intrinsic, in the sense that no matter how hard you try, it seems that you cannot success. So I will try to argue that this kind of puzzle is indeed intrinsic. So here is the outline. So I will introduce the so-called period reversible measurement circuit. And the above mentioned Floki code will be a special case. And then I will introduce some kind of more abstract notion called the measurement quantum cellular automaton, which generalizes the usual quantum cellular automaton. And then I will put them together. So I will argue that the boundary of the Floki code is indeed anomalous in some sense. Okay, so let's begin with something more fundamental. So we all know that measurement is in general a non-reversible process. You know, if we measure some wave function psi, then in general the wave function will going to collapse. So as shown in this picture. However, in this talk, I'm going to focus on a special class of measurement, and we call it reversible measurement. So to illustrate what is the reversible measurement, maybe I will talk about this kind of very easy example. But since this slide will be important for the whole talk, so I will be very slow. So let's say we have two qubits. Now the first one is in a pure state psi, which is a up plus b down, and the second state is the plus. Now the first step is to measure z1 z2. As we know, to measure zz, what we do is that we will expand this wave function into the eigenfunction of this z1 z2. So I will expand the function like this, and then we measure zz. So what's important for us is that, as you can see, no matter what are A and B, the probability to get z equals 1 and z equals minus 1 is always the same. because they have the same amplitude square. So in this sense, this information can tell us no, this kind of measurement can tell us no information about A and B. Okay, then, okay, let's say we measure ZZ and we got plus one, for example. Now the wave function will collapse into this guy, which is A up up plus B down down. Now the second step is to measure X2. So again, to measure X2, we expand the wave function into the eigenbasis of X2. So we expand something, we expand it like this. Now again, we measure the X2, and we can see that, again, the probability to get X2 plus one and X2 minus one is the same. Because they have same amplitude square. So again, we have no information, again, from this measurement. And let's say we measure X2 and we get a plus one. Now the wave function will become this thing. And as you can see, this wave function is exactly the same as before.
Question? Uh-huh. Is it possible to generalize these reversible measurements to mini qubit states?
Yes, I'm going to do that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So in this example, as you can see, this kind of measurement is indeed reversible in the sense that you can undo this kind of this measurement by another measurement. And you may ask, what if we got, say, ZD equals minus one or X2 equals minus one? And the answer is, you can also get back to this previous state by doing some kind of Pauli operation. So in this talk, all the reversibility is up to the Pauli operation.
But sorry, this depends on the state that you're applying these on? Or?
It doesn't. So the point is that no matter what are A and B, you always do the same thing.
So what about the plus state on the second qubit?
The plus state. Oh, yeah, the plus state is the same.
Is that important for defining reversibility in this case?
It's not that important. You can also do minus, and it's all the same thing, but you will do different Pauli correction.
What about like a superposition, like arbitrary state on the second qubit?
That's not okay, as I will show like right away.
So reversibility depends on the set of states you're applying it on as well?
Yes.
Okay. Basically, you're saying that there's some subspace of an
overspace. It's subspace defined by this right. Rather. Right. Yeah. Reversibility is defined on a subspace.
Okay.
It's only reversible on the subspace. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Suppose the states are entangled, psi n plus. Then is reversible measurement possible even then?
If it's entangled between A and B, it's not reversible.
Okay, only for direct product states.
Yeah. So as I will explain right now, this kind of reversibility only applies to a subspace, and this subspace is defined by this stabilizer operators. So subspace is defined by the subspace which x2 equals one. So in this example, x2 equals one means that it cannot be entangled. Okay, so let's say because this space is defined by x2 equals one, now you do a Z measurement. Now you go to another space called Z to Z1 equals something, equals one or minus one. And now you do X2 again, you go back to the subspace defined by X2. And for our talk, it will be very helpful to look at this process from the point of view of the logical operators. So at the first step, there are two logical operators up to equivalence, which is Z1 and X1. Now the Z1 commutes with the measurement, so it's still a logical operator after measurement. So it's preserved. And again, it's Z1 again commutes with this measurement, so it's also preserved. What's not that easy, maybe it's the X1. So the X1 is not commute with the Z1, Z2. But it's equivalent to X1, X2 because X2 equals one. So and X1, X2 commutes with the measurement. So the X1, X2 is preserved. So in this sense, I will say that the X1 operator becomes X1, X2 operator. And then the X1, X2 operator commutes with X2. So it's going to be preserved. So and again, it becomes X1, X2. And I will write it back to X1 because they are, again, equivalent. So from this point of view, the X1 operator will become the X1, X2, and then become back to X1. So as you can see that in this example, we have a well-defined and reversible dynamics of these logical qubits, of these logical operators. And I will show that. So the first result of our work is that this kind of phenomena is something general. So in general, if there's no information from the measurement, in the sense that I just mentioned, then we have a well-defined reversible dynamics of the equivalent class of logical operators. And this applies to like a system with lots of qubits.
Does it have to be qubits?
Qubits or qubits, but in this work, I will only talk about Clifford or Pauli. Okay, what do we mean by well-defined reversible dynamics is mathematically given by this following structure. Let's say before measurement and after measurement, we have two different groups, S1, S2. Now, by definition, the logical operators are those operators that commute with the whole group. So I will denote by CX1. C means the centralizer. And up to equivalence means that means you take the quotient group. So a dynamics of this equivalent class means we have a well-defined map between these two quotient groups. And the map is defined by the process as follows. Let's say we want to find the image of this equivalent class of L. What we do is that we pick up arbitrary a representation, like logical operators L, and now we will find a operator A in the first group, so that LA will become commute with both S1 and S2. And now I will define that the L become LA. And what I mean by well-defined is that the class of LA is independent of their choice of L and A. Okay, so here is another example, maybe more interesting, to show what is a periodic reversible measurement circuit. So by a circuit, I mean we can have a lot of qubits, and we have some kind of spatial structure. So we put all these kind of measurements into a structure of the circuit. And periodic means that your measurement is periodic. So in this example, I have a periodic form measurement. The first step I do is that I will measure the x operator on the even sides, and then I will measure zz. Now we measure x operator on the odd sides, and then again I measure zz, but on a shifted side. So in this example, if you keep track of the logical operators, let's say we want to check this x1 operator. Now, at the first step, since x1 does not commute with zz, we went into find another operator, which is equivalent to x1. So it is x1, x2. Now it commutes, so it goes through. Now it also commutes, so it goes through. But at this step, it doesn't commute. So I will find another one, which is equivalent to this one, which is x2, x2 and x3. Now it commutes again, and it's equivalent to this one. So the net effect, as you can see, is that the x1 operator is going to be x3 operator. And also similarly, a z1 operator is going to be a z3 operator. So as a result, in this circuit, I have realized a kind of shift on the logical operators. The Flocky code I just mentioned is also an example of a periodic measurement circuit, and it's a circuit in 2D. So again, the Flocky code is a pure order 3 measurement circuit. And we can check that, although it's not that easy, but we can check that each step is indeed reversible.
So what is the subspace that you define
it? Oh, yeah, I will do it in like size. So the subspace is defined by the step-by-step group. So let's say after a right measurement, we will get this stage. So the step-by-step group is defined by it's generated by all these placate operators and the measurement operators that you use. You can check that they already commute. And also you can from this kind of definition, you can also check that this is equivalent to up to some finite depth circuit. It is equivalent to toric code. So this kind of period three of measurement realize a kind of non-trivial transformation between three different toric code.
Sorry, the toric code is only a non-trivial subspace. Greater than one dimension if it's on some periodic boundary conditions, right?
Right. Here is periodic boundary condition.
If you have a single state, the concept of reversibility is not really useful, right?
Yes. Yes, right. By talking about the Merriman circuit or whether it's reversible, I'm talking about a closed space. Yeah, but for arbitrary state in a closed space, it will go back to itself up to some poly operations.
Yeah, so this is like the four degenerate states.
Yeah. In this case, if we put a torus, it's four. So again, it's equivalent to a toric code, and in toric code, we know that you have string operators, and here again, indeed, you can check that you do have the string operators which commute with all these kind of operators here. But what's interesting is that if you keep track of say one string operator starting from here, now if you go to the loop. The like three-step measurement, it doesn't go back to itself. Instead, if you do it further, like if you do six steps, it will come back to itself. So you have some kind of a period doubling phenomenon here. So on these logical operators. Okay, so much for the reversal memory circuit, and now I will introduce the next notion, which is a Merriman quantum cellular automata. And So before I introduce Merriman quantum cellular automata, I want to introduce what is the quantum cellular automata. So this name sounds kind of scary, but it's actually something pretty simple. So the QCA is, by definition, is just a unitary which preserves the locality. By preserve locality, I mean if you start from some kind of local operator O, and you conjugate by the unitary U, you got U dagger OU, then this U dagger OU will be supported on some region which is close to the support of O. So there are two typical classes of QCA. One is the finite depth unitary circuit. It's simply because it is unitary because it's a unitary circuit. It's locality preserving because it's finite depth, so you have a light cone. Another typical class is called the shift. So basically, any operator on qubit one will become the same operator but on qubit two. And it's kind of interesting that this kind of simple process cannot be realized by a finite depth circuit. So they are two different things. And in 1D, importantly, in 1D, we have a like well-established index theory. This index theory tells you that in 1D, these two possibilities are essentially the only possibilities, in the sense that any 1D QCA can be decomposed into a finite depth circuit and pass a translation. And there is also a so-called GNVW index. Basically, the log of this GNVW index will tell you the number of shifts in QCA. And in our work, we generalize this to a Merriman quantum cellular automata. So the difference between a MQCA and QCA and a QCA is that the operator algebra could be different. In the EuroQCA, the operator algebra is a tensor product of local poly operators. But this is not always for a physical system. A physical system could have some underlying operator algebra which is not factorizable. So in this talk, I will generalize the operator algebra to something not necessarily factorizable. So I will do algebra which is generated by this group. So where L is an arbitrary group of the poly operators, and S is an arbitrary normal subgroup of L. As you can see, I use L and S because I want to make a comparison between the previous notions, because the L will be, for us, L will be the group of logical operators, and S will become the group of stabilizers.
What is S for?
What is S for the floppy? Oh, for floppy code, it's just the toric code, placket, and it's just the stabilizers operators.
Yeah, L is the logical operators.
Yeah.
What is S?
Is the stabilizer operator. The stabilizer operator.
What is
that? Stabilizer operator.
What is
the placket star.
Okay, S should be a subgroup of L.
Yeah.
I thought you said L is just for logical operator.
L is a logical operator.
So logic, L is a C2 cross C2. So then, right, or am I missing something?
Yeah, I always.
So then S has to be a subgroup of L.
Uh-huh. Oh, no. Oh, L is it's not the like equivalence class of logical operators.
Oh. So here,
yeah,
L over S is C2
quantity. Yeah, L over S is this, it's this over this U.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So L could be any S could be a L. Yeah. By the way, for our talk, the kind of string operator is not important. So I will only care about those local operators. So in our case, the L is actually equal to S. The QSA is defined by a dynamics called unitary, and it's defined by a conjugation like this. And in our MQSA construction, we consider a more abstract automorphism of this L over S. And also in our work, we have an index theory which is a generalization of the GAVW index. So if we only think about qubit, then the log of the GAVW index will be quantized. And it's quantized to an integer, as right here. However, for MQSA, the index, although it's also quantized, but it will be quantized to a half integer.
Huh?
Mr.
Alpha, what is it?
Automorphism. Abstract automorphism of, like for example, here, the alpha is automorphism on operator algebra defined by a conjugation. And here, alpha is something. We don't know what is something, but it's abstractly, it is automorphism of the L over S.
Locality preserving has the same meaning as before.
It's a similar meaning as this. Basically, you look at the support of the operator. And after this alpha, we become have a similar support.
Question: mm-hmm. How precisely do you define the support of element in the quotient group?
Oh yeah. So this question is a bit technical. So the definition of locality prism is as follows: suppose that you have a class of logical operator, which is localizable in somewhere, just localizable. And then the locality prism is that it must be localizable on somewhere slightly bigger than this. Okay.
For the action, the logical operator, it can be localized in more than one way.
Yeah.
So it's like for arbitrary way of localization.
Arbitrary way of localization.
Okay.
Yeah. So as long as it's localizable here. Now it must be localizable in some region that is kind of bigger than this previous localizable region.
And so for QCA, there's usually no like reference stabilizer Clifford assumption, right? So for MQCA here, you can generalize the classes beyond stabilizer, like say commuting projector states, stuff like that. Or, like, is this a generalizable notion? Or?
Okay. So for the QCA, the S is just a trivial group, and the L is a poly group.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sense, MQCA is indeed. I mean, the MQCA defined here is indeed a generalization of arbitrary QCA.
Well, for QCA, U can be arbitrary. But for MQCA, are you considering a particular Clifford?
Oh, I see. For this definition, it doesn't need to be Clifford. But for what follows, it will be Clifford.
Okay.
So this statement about half Z, though, is that kind of related to the fact that it's Pauli?
Sorry, what's that?
The fact that it's half Z, it seems like, must be related to the fact that you have Pauli.
Oh, right. The index M here is only defined by for Clifford.
Yeah. So for Q dit, I assume it will be 1 over D times Z.
Oh, for Q dit, it's also 1 half.
Oh, really?
Ah, yeah. Yeah, right. For Q dit, it's also 1 half, yeah.
Okay, you need to change the base of log. A base
of log, yeah. So in the previous slide, I used this kind of Q plus. It's just some kind of smart way to kind of compress all the different dimensions together. And here I will only talk about the qubits. So I just take the log of log two.
Are you gonna make a connection with these like radical chiral phases, like in MSOC AMBL?
There is a connection, but I will not do it in this talk. Okay, so yeah, maybe I will talk of some example of the MQCA. The first example is just a QCA. A QCA is always a MQCA. Like for example, the shift we just mentioned. In this shift, the MQCA dynamics is given by this kind of shift, which is x1 goes to x1 plus 1, xi plus 1, and zi goes to zi plus 1. In this picture, each blue dot will be a qubit, and each green dot will be an operator. So you can see you have a kind of shifting process of the operators, and the JMV double index is given by 1. And our MQCA index is also 1. So in this sense, the MQCA index is really a generalization of the JMV double index. And also I already described this kind of Merriman circuit. This is also a MQCA. And in general, any periodic reversible Merriman circuit is a MQCA. And for this example, the process is shown here. So basically, for all the odd edge, for all the odd sets, you have two logicals x and z, and they become a they have a shift. So again, the MQCA index is again given by 1. So up to now, I have explained the first step of the hierarchy. So basically, we know that any finite depth unitary circuit will be a quantum cellular automaton, and the quantum cellular automaton will also be a periodic locally reversible Merriman circuit. This is because at least in 1D, this is because a quantum cellular automaton only have two situations. When one is a quantum circuit, another one is a shift, and we can check that either a shift and unit circuit can be realized by the measurement. But what's important for our talk is actually this third thing. So first of all, the periodic locally reversible measurement circuit is always a MQCA. That's obvious. But what's not obvious is that this kind of inclusion is proper, in the sense that there are some kind of measurement quantum cellular automata which cannot be realized by periodic locally reversible measurement circuit. So here is an example of this kind of non-trivial MQCA. In this example, the logical operators is generated by this xi, zi plus 1. And s is trivial. And the MQCA dynamics is given by some kind of shift. So xi, zi plus 1 goes to the same operator, but for the shifted sets. And if you make a comparison between this picture and the previous picture, the difference is that, first of all, this operator is kind of longer. But what's more important is that on average, above each qubit, you now have only one operator instead of two operators. So because the shift of two operators has index equals 1, so here the shift of one operator will have index, which is 1/2. So in this example, the MQCA index will be equal to 1/2. And I have mentioned that this is an example of a proper inclusion in the sense that it cannot be realized by a 1D periodic reversible Merriman circuit. This is because we have the following theorem. So we'll prove that in 1D, a periodic reversible Merriman circuit, if you view it as a MQCA, then it must have an integer index. So this 1/2 index is indeed something beyond the 1D periodic Merriman circuit.
Mm-hmm. Can you repeat the intuition why this is a 1/2?
So this is 1/2 because if you make a comparison between this picture. So in this picture, above each qubit, you have two operators. Now these two operators will shift together. And as a result, it has an index which is equal to 1.
The two operators are x and z.
X and z. Uh-huh. But here, on average, above each qubit, you only have one operator.
That's
xi, zi plus 1. Uh-huh. And yeah, so the number of operators become kind of 1/2. So any correct definition of MQCA index must give you 1/2. Oh, by the way, in our talk, in our work, we don't do the calculation like this. We have a rigorous definition of MQCA index, and we can do calculation, which is indeed 1/2. But here, I just want to give you the intuition why it should be 1/2. Okay. Yeah. So and one may ask, why do I have this kind of weird construction X I Z I? And so here comes to the third part of this talk.
So for the KCM is the translation cannot be realized by finite depth, but it can be realized by some unitary circuit.
Oh, sorry, what's that again?
The translation operator cannot be realized by a finite depth circuit.
Yeah.
Realized by some, you know, deeper circuit.
Yeah.
So here, this half shift cannot be realized by periodic reversible measurement circuit, but if you relax the reversibility condition, then it can, or like there has to be some way to realize this half shift.
Yeah.
So what you know what.
I'm not sure if you release the reversibility condition whether you can achieve it or not. But I will talk about how do we achieve this kind of half shift.
I know you're going to use the 2D, but I'm saying even for the KCA in 1D, you know, even without 2D, if you have a deep enough circuit, you can achieve translation. So I'm wondering, like, what is the corresponding statement for this measurement?
I see.
How would you achieve it in 1D?
Oh, I see. So at least for this example, you can never achieve it in 1D, even if you have a like very, very deep circuit. This is because the algebra is fundamentally different from any 1D algebra you can achieve. So the way that we prove this theorem is that we have a classification of 1D kind of poly subgroup. 1D stabilizer group. So basically, we prove that in 1D, any stabilizer group will be equivalent up to finite time circuit will be equivalent to some kind of like disconnected Ising chain. And each Ising chain will be 1 qubit. Because as you know, the Ising chain will reduce your like dimension of the space into 2. So you can regard it as 1 qubit. And then any reversible dynamics of this kind of 1D Ising chains can be effectively regarded as a QCA on this kind of effective qubits. But here, the algebra is fundamentally cannot be like transformed into that form. So at least in this example, you can never do that, even if you have a like very, very large, very, very deep like a reversible circuit. Okay, yeah, and you may ask why do we have this kind of weird construction? And I will argue that this kind of construction appears naturally at the boundary of some 2D system. And this is a major motivation for us to consider this kind of MQCA in general. So before we jump into the Fourier code, I will talk about a simpler model called Wentz-Plaquin model. The Wentz-Plaquin model is a model for 2D topological order, which is equivalent to the toric code. In the toric code, we have some kind of Plaquin operator and star operator, and all the qubits live on the edge. But in the Wentz-Plaquin model, you only have Plaquin operator, and your qubits live on the vertex. But it's actually equivalent to the toric code. Okay, now if you put this kind of Wentz-Plaquin model on a half space like this, and you try to find all like logical operators that commute with all the Plaquin operators. So first you will find those kind of string operators, but beyond that you will also find those logical those kind of boundary operators like this. So you can check that say x z here will be commute with all these Plaquin operators. And you may ask, why do we only have xz, we don't have zx? Because a zx here, although it commutes with the Plaquin here, but it doesn't commute with this Plaquin. So at the boundary algebra is really only given by the xi, zi plus 1. And although I will not give you the full details, but there does exist a 2D periodic reversible measurement circuit which realize this kind of 2D, which realize become 1D half shift of this weird MQCA. And this is something general. So in general, if you have a 2D topological bulk, then in the boundary, it will be an MQCA. And this is what we're going to use for the Floki boundary. For the Floki boundary, you can also work out the boundary. You can also work out the boundary operator algebra. And this, here is something more weird. So the algebra is generalized by those kind of three-body operators and four-body operators. And you can also work out the details of this kind of translation. Now the translation is given by something like this. The four-body operator will become a three-body operator, and three-body operator will become a four-body operator. So something like this picture. And again, because on average, you only have one layer of operators, so this translation must have an index which is just minus 1/2, because it minus it because it's going to left. And one may ask, because I have mentioned that there are actually other ways to introduce the Floki boundary. You may ask whether this kind of 1/2 is intrinsic to the Floki code, and the answer is yes. So basically, we have proved the following theorem. So if you have a 2D periodic reverse memory circuit that is topological in the bulk, then the MQCA index is actually independent on your choice of the boundary, meaning that you can do a different other boundary condition, but whether it's a half integer or an integer is already it must be fixed. It's fully determined by the bulk. So in this sense, you have a kind of bulk edge correspondence. And this correspondence is described by some kind of little number. And this little number is actually some kind of anomaly because if you have z2 equals 1 in the edge, it means that you cannot realize this MQCA as a standalone 1D system. Because I have mentioned that we prove that for any standalone 1D system, it must have an integer index. And also, if you have if this z2 index is a half integer, then from the bulk point of view, it means that you have an obstruction to have a trivial boundary. Because for a trivial boundary, then the MQCA index must be equal to zero. There's no operator for you to move. So in this sense, we have kind of understood. We have already understood the puzzle. So the puzzle is that why we cannot introduce a nice boundary condition for the Floki code. The answer is for any boundary of the Floki code, it must be a half integer. But for a nice boundary, it must have a zero integer, which is a contradiction.
Can one argue that the error-correcting properties of a Floki code kind of require this anomaly to be present?
No. Oh, I see. So it is not the case. For example, here I do this kind of RGB measurement, which has an index 1/2. I can also do this. Another schedule called RGB, RBG. Now this thing has an integer MQCA index, but it's also error-correcting. So whether this number is half or not one half doesn't really affect whether you can do error-correction. Okay, so here is the conclusion. So in this talk, I have introduced a class of measurement circuit called the periodic locally reversible measurement circuit, and the Floki code will be one example. And also, I introduced a generalization of QCA called MQCA, and we introduced an index theory for the MQCA. And we discovered a kind of bulk edge correspondence between the 2D topological periodic reversible memory circuit and the 1D MQCA. So basically, the MQCA can appear at the boundary of the memory circuit. And this MQCA, mode Z, is completely determined by the bulk. And as a concrete example, the RGB Honeycomb Flocky code has a little anomaly, which solves the puzzle why you cannot have a trivial boundary. Okay, that's too much for talk. Okay, thank you for coming here. Any questions?
I have a elementary question about reversible measurements that you defined at the beginning.
So oh, okay.
It's the first time I'm hearing about it. Yeah. So the measurement entangles the two states in the first, after the first measurement. Then
yes.
It disentangles.
Yes.
So can you think about some unitary operation measure? Suppose I give an arbitrary state. And I apply it unitary and take it to some entangling, big, and then come back just by reverse operation.
Mm-hmm.
This is not that.
This is not that, but it is, turns out to be in some sense equivalent to that. So as you can see, like this space is like the space of if you do different A and B, you get a linear space. So this space, you can transform this space into this space by some unitary. Like the space of this wave function to the space of this wave function. You can do it by unitary.
Then it's state-dependent unitary.
It's not state-dependent, but it's measurement outcome-dependent. Let's say if your measurement outcome is say z equals 1, now you will have the unitary which transform this state to this state. This is not state dependent. It is state independent, because you can simply like transform a psi into this thing. Basically, you can just do a kind of up to up up, down to down down. So this is a state independent unitary. But
does this reversible measurements occur in any other context in physics, quantum physics?
Sorry, what?
Does it occur in any other context in quantum physics, this notion of reversible measurements? I have not heard about it before.
Not am I aware of.
OK, it's very interesting.
Yeah, but I want to emphasize that this unitary is, although it is state independent, but it's measurement outcome dependent. Because if your measurement is outcome is minus 1, now this wave function must be transformed to this guy. So here it must be that up goes to up down and down goes to down up. So it's different from the previous unitary.
So is there a theorem that states that if we start with the entangled states, there is no reversible measurement possible?
I see. For the entangled states, it is possible, and it is possible as I showed, like it's exactly here, from this thing to this thing. This thing is always entangled, but this measurement is again reversible. So this kind of ZZ and X are reversible measurement, like they reverse each other. You can also like first do X2 and undo this measurement by doing the value 2.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other? Okay.
Yeah, this might be related to Dominic's earlier question. So this radical chiral, okay, unitary is also another way to pump a Majorana, or to translate a Majorana to the boundary.
Uh-huh.
So are there examples of like 2D MCA that, you know, are like not achievable by Fourier unitaries?
2D MQFA that not achievable by Fourier. I think the answer of this question depends on the content, like precise definition of MQFA. For this talk, I only think about the Clifford case. And in this case, I think we can prove that this kind of reversible measurement circuit is equivalent to some kind of measurement outcome dependent unitary, as I mentioned like just before. So in some sense, it's always a Fourier unitary. But it's a Fourier unitary that is only defined on subspace. Yeah, so I think we prefer this kind of approach because it's kind of more intrinsic, because a floki unitary is definable on the whole space, but this is only really a question of the subspace. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why we prefer say more abstract automorphism instead of say a unitary. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thanks for coming here.